That's father-daughter beatboxing team Nicole Paris and Ed Cage.
You may be one of literally millions of people who've watched their 2015 videos called Mentor and Apprentice on YouTube to see Nicole beat her father at beatboxing using the skills that he taught her.
It's really incredible. They're nationally famous, but did you know they're from St. Louis? I'm Willis Ryder Arnold.
And I'm Nancy Fowler, and this is Cut and Paste. So we invited Paris and Cage to come in and demonstrate their beatboxing, and we ended up laughing over family story after family story, and especially after Nicole's mom joined us.
It was really hilarious, but the conversation also took a serious turn when Cage talked about his difficult years as a teenager.
But for these past 2 years, since those beatboxing videos went viral, Cage says he and his daughter have gone places he would never have imagined.
It's been wild, if you ask me. You know what? I never thought, first of all, I didn't know what a TED Talk was. I mean, I listened
to BBC.
Who's
this TED guy?
Yeah. And all of a sudden, they fly us out to New York, and we see all of these people. And as soon as we got off the plane, people went crazy. I'm like, well, they can't be crazy because I'm the old fat guy. I'm like, they're not going crazy over me. They're like, oh, my God, Pops. And then they're like, okay, we're done with you. Nicole, ah, they got the scream, and they're like, oh, my God, they beat you. You're a loser. You lost. You're good, but you lost. And I'm like, do I say thanks or do I punch you? You know, but you're a little kid, so, but I do fight little kids.
FYI.
Yeah, you know, walk around, but I have 100 million peoples. They say, Pops, you was good, but you lost. So 100 million people around the world walking around doing this, loser.
Even though you're actually partially responsible for
right.
the talent of this one,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I would think so.
Yeah.
But you know, the people, they really think it's a battle most of the time. But as you've seen in the Mama's Reality, it's just be us jam sessions
jam
going
sessions.
At it.
Yeah.
And she just so happened to beat me every time. But you know, like I said, it's really not a battle. It's just something that we communicate together, we bond with it, and we just have fun with it.
So I bring the new newness.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I bring the new newness.
The new newness.
In the jam sessions.
Okay.
That's like future newness.
That's right.
Okay.
As opposed
newness.
To the
That's
old newness or the regular newness.
I mean, you said it. I didn't say nothing like that.
So you're the new and you're the new.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Was there anybody before you that was into beatboxing? Where did you learn?
I learned when beatboxing first came to St. Louis. Well, actually, when hip-hop first came to St. Louis in the late 70s, early 80s. And at that time, St. Louis, we were still a few years behind. So right around 82, 83, you know, we started hearing the DJs come out scratching. And then, you know, I just so happened to see this guy standing over on the side of the turntable. I'm like, well, what you doing? Why you not dancing? He like, man, I'm trying to do them beats. I'm like, oh, you a DJ? He said, no, I'm a beatboxer. I'm like, what?
It's the first time you heard the word.
Yeah, beatboxing. He like, you know, we make them beats. And see, them was the simple beats because we had the TR-808 machine. So a lot of times that machine was only capable of doing really simple beats, you know, like the Run DMC. And then party from party to party, you start seeing two guys, three guys, and next thing you know, you see 15, 20 guys. We're standing all by the DJ booth, and we wasn't DJs, we were beatboxers because we wanted to be the guy that brought the sound when the DJ is not around. So it just blew us by storm, and you know, I just so happened to be, you know, crushing cats, as they say. Back, I was crushing them with because I have this strong bass. And so, you know, when hip hop came, man, it was all about trying to emulate what you heard on the record. So, and then once Nicole was in the belly, it's just all about thumping my wife's belly. And to see her, you know, jiggle in the belly, man, it was fantastic.
So you actually see her respond to it.
Oh, yeah. She would feel it more. She'd be like, can you not do that? I'm like, no. I'm like, it looks, it's cute to me. You know, but you sitting up there doing this, I don't know what that means. That don't faze me. But it's cute to see the belly go like that when you beatbox.
When you were doing that when you were younger, did you end up actually then putting down beats for people to rhyme over or anything like that? Or what did you kind of do when you were doing that?
Well, it at that time, it never got that far because hip hop, it changed so quickly. The music changed so quickly. At one point, it was all about the DJ and the beats. And then like in the mid 80s, late 80s, it became about the rhymes. So the beatboxers, and plus after Big Puff or the Fat Boys kind of, you know, died off, that was kind of the it of the fifth element of hip hop. So didn't nobody do it no more, but it was still always times where we're at the park and guys would start rhyming and I'll start beatboxing. And you know, whenever we're at parties, you know, you always had the guy be like, come on, Eddie, beatbox for us. And, you know, I just started building up my name in St. Louis as being one of the best beatboxers in St. Louis. But, you know, then after a certain time, you know, 88, 89, it kind of died out.
Huh? Nicole, do you have any awareness of when you first knew what beatboxing was? I mean, you know, you always experienced it, but at what point did you, like, really become aware of it?
At the age of 13. That was my first. Yeah, that was my first talent show. I came home and I was like, Pops, Mom, they're having a talent show at the elementary school. I'm going to join. And then I didn't realize, but what am I going to do? I didn't have a talent. And so my dad, he was like, just beatbox. And I was like, Daddy, I cannot beatbox. I am not that good. I can only do one beat that you ever show me. And so he started to teach me how to hold the mic. He started to teach me how to transition from different beats. And after that, I just started to add my own beats onto what he taught me.
But not until that time did you,
right?
Even as a young child, it just kind of was something he did and
yep.
You knew it and you watched it and you heard it, but it was just born out of your need for a talent.
Right, right, right.
I love the idea that there was this point in time that you weren't necessarily like as good as you are now and you had to actually ask him, like, mm-hmm. What do I do? Because, I, you know, this is how I was introduced to you, as was like, you know, millions uh-huh. of other people. So it's kind of funny to hear, like, oh, yeah, I had to actually ask somebody for a little bit of help with that when, like, I just see you on videos, like, crush it no matter what.
I think that's what he actually wants me to do. I think that's what he always looked forward to me doing, because he taught me how to be back or beatbox, so he wanted me to take it to another level, you know, teach people what he taught me. And so that's why I crush him. I crush him down. You know,
I got I meant like crush it, not necessarily him. You're both good.
You know, I got a story. I remember one time I came home, and this is after she did the talent show, maybe a year or so after the talent show. And I came home from work, I guess about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. She's sitting up in the bed just knocking her head, you know, making weird noises. And I'm like, that's not beatboxing. You know, and it really made me mad because It made me mad because I wanted to put her in this box. You know, I wanted to say that, well, what you doing is not hip hop. Just because I don't agree with it or I don't do it doesn't mean that it's not beatboxing. She has taken what I have taught her and created her own style of beatboxing. So it took me a little while to pull back. And I had to pull back one day and tell her, you know what? If you want to sound like Pikachu or Pokemon or Charizard or Bulbasaur, I know all of the Pokemon.
I'm impressed.
And, 150 of them, I know them all. If that's how you want to do it, then do it. And then over time, I started seeing how she started to compilate the beats right after. Like me, most times I have to practice to keep up with her. And even when I'm starting to compilate the beats where we're at where we're standing in each other's face, she don't have to do as much as that. She just sits there and just boom, 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 boom. And sometimes I have to, you know, kind of, okay, can you do a slow beat, please? So I can catch up.
Please. Did you know that she was in some way, well, you knew that she was creating her own thing, but that she was in, might surpass you? And did that?
I was hoping she surpassed
me. You were hoping that.
Yes, yes. That's the whole point of teaching this, so that she can, you know, surpass me. I want her to be the best that she can be in what she wants to do. My style of beatboxing is me. This is how I beatbox. You know, but if she feel that beatboxing is scratching and singing all at the same time, then who am I to say that this is not beatboxing, you know? Right.
And I'm curious, from your perspective, how did some of those early conversations go when he was saying, like, I'm not sure that's beatboxing?
Well, I kind of responded to a I don't care type attitude, you know. And so I really just taught him my style of beatboxing, right? Because he taught me that hip-hop is a freedom of expression. And so it kind of threw me off because I'm like, Daddy, you the one who told me that hip-hop is freedom of expression. So now you're sitting here saying that it's not hip-hop. And so I was like, well, Daddy, I'm just going to do me, and I'm going to continue to beatbox like this. And so I was kind of teaching him some of my techniques. And so, and that's where the jam sessions come from. So we just feed off of each other. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you've actually referenced jam sessions a couple times. I was wondering if you might, for people that don't know what that is or might not have seen any of the videos, give us kind of a demonstration of what is.
You ready?
Yep.
I'm laughing, you guys. Don't stop.
My mic sounds nice. Check one. Mic sounds nice. Check two. My mic sounds nice. Check three. Baby girl.
Historic in here.
That is our entire life, believe it or not. That is how, I mean, it's times where we can be driving, like when we actually drove to Atlanta for the BET Awards, we was just in the car because they gave us this real nice fancy car because they made a mistake and they didn't have our car ready. And I'm like, look, we have to be in Atlanta in 10 hours. Regardless of what goes on, yeah, we barely had 10 hours. And they like, well, all we have is this, what was it, a Chrysler 300? Mm-hmm. I'm like, what is that? I'll take it. And when they pulled it around, I'm like,
oh, yeah, praise God. Yep.
Yeah, praise God.
There it is. Yep, here we go.
So we jumps in the car. I go home. I grab them. We fly down in Atlanta. And as we get past, I think it was Paducah, Kentucky, we just crossed that bridge, and we went from Paducah to Atlanta. Beatboxing, and my wife, she's sitting up there with the pillow doing this, cringing all up, trying to turn the music on, and we just
I like that you said, like, sorry, as though something went wrong.
Like, oops, didn't mean to let that slip out. So you guys just kind of fall into a rhythm. You've done this for so long together. You can see how it just works collaboratively, really, with what you normally hear about is the competition.
Well, a lot of times when Nicole beatboxes, she does, like when I beatbox, you can pretty much tell when I'm going to do a break or a backbeat. Like I go, you pretty much know my pattern, you know. You pretty much know my pattern. But when you have, I find it great to see how Nicole is able to incorporate that. And instead of the normal breaks that I do, she'll put like four breaks leading up to the main break. And sometimes it's really hard to keep up with her because she gets into this zone. Like me, I practice. She don't. Every single beat is a different riff. You know, like the jazz musicians, they got them different riffs where they go, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Nikki, she can literally do that, but it'd be like breakbeat, backbeat. That will... I'll be somewhere looking for some of my Bruderol. I'm like, no.
Very funny story. So it was like 2 weeks ago we were in the studio. And I said, okay, all we need to spend in the studio was like 5 minutes. I was like, Daddy, we only going to spend 5 minutes in the studio, okay? He was like, yeah, okay, we ready. I'm ready, y'all. All big, puffed all up. Yeah, I'm ready. I laid the first bar. And I was like, okay, your turn now. And he was like, oh, nah, babe. Nah, we're not getting ready to do that. I can't do that over that. That's too fat. I was getting mad because he couldn't beatbox over what I beatbox. And so I'm like, Daddy, this is taking longer than what it needs to be. Like,
but she had so many different riffs in
still,
there
though,
to where you...
Listen, you guys, all he needed... Okay, let me calm down. We spent like almost 2 days in the studio. It made me so mad. Okay, all I needed was a bass in the back. That's it. He's talking about, oh, no, it's all over the place.
It literally was. When she beatbox, it's not like I said where you can catch the groove. You can catch the riff. She go, kid, and then she start talking, and then she start meowing, and then I'm like, well, where's the backbeat at?
I gotta admit, I do.
I'm like, are you serious? You know, you gotta give me, as long as she do it, I can keep up with it. But when she does, she go, baby, boom, beat, I'm like, where's that beat that you catch on to? You latch on to? I'm like, no, you need to do something over.
So, Mom, I'd love to hear from you. What about these two? What's happening here? What is your life like?
TA in the building.
Well, my life is pretty much, if you look at Nicole Paris's YouTube station, and I have a video on there called Mama's Reality. That's pretty much how my life is being. I am putting Nicole and her dad on blast.
Tell us about that video.
Well, in that video, they were supposed to have been cooking. They had started at a certain time, and it took them maybe over 4 or 5 hours to get dinner done. So I just wanted to give people a glimpse into my life.
Come on, don't stop now.
Yeah, shut the gas. Go, come on. Get that.
Anybody else in the family do this beatboxing?
Just the two. We have two other children. We have a son. He's an author, a sci-fi author, and we have a youngest daughter. And Mr. Cage, he would work a lot. Me, I was pretty much a stay-at-home mom. I took a raise to rear the family and all of that. And he worked so much, and he had to find a way to connect with each one of our children. So beatboxing so happened to be for Nicole. I think the reason why Mr. Cage knows all of the Pokemon is because our son was obsessed. Everything, sci-fi, everything out of this world, he was obsessed with it. And then our youngest, she's big into politics. So he, you know, learned to, you know, learn what each one of them like, and, you know, went according to that.
So, Nicole, where do you fall in the sibling order?
I am the middle child.
You're the middle child.
I'm the second born.
Okay. So that's nonsense what they say about the second child going under the radar and
yes,
hiding out, because you're a presence.
Right.
That's for sure.
Being the second child, you know, honestly, they get on my last nerves. They really do. they make me want to beat them.
And Nancy, they all get on my nerves.
They just get on my last nerves. The firstborn think he should say or have to say so, and then the thirdborn, my sister, she thinks that she don't have to say anything and just leave it up to us two. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I have to be in a mix-up. But now I'm learning to just keep my mouth closed and to go off on them when need be, when they get on my nerves. But I love them dearly, though.
How has the kind of, like, development of the attention to your shared skills shifted that dynamic or influenced kind of the family as a whole? or has it not?
As far as...
Well, just like all of a sudden having attention based on this skill set that you two share.
It hasn't. We raised our children that nobody gets more than the other.
Right.
And depending on any given time, whatever each one of them doing, they all gurney me and Mr. Cage attention. Because we don't want them to feel like, oh, this person is getting more. So we try to keep it balanced. You know, our attention, our support, everything that they've needed through life, even into their adulthood, because our son is now 27.
You know, what to piggyback on what Ms. Cage said is that we were a very, very young family. You know, we were 16 and 17 when we had our son, you know, and we both high school dropouts. I was a drug dealer, acting a fool, running the streets, dropped out of high school. We both dropped out of high school. And I was illiterate until I was about 20. So, you know, the working a lot is why I spent so much time away from the home. I had like, what, 4 jobs? So, but, you know, when you have a young family like that, we were very close-knit. You know, it wasn't like we was 30 years older than our kids. We were 16 years older than our oldest child. So a lot of times we found ourselves really close on all things. Even to this day, Ms. Kay, she brought something up about 5 years ago. They all came home. Nicole had just went off to college, and they were all came home, and they went to the grocery store, and I just so happened to be off that day. And Ms. Kay, she said, come here for a second and watch this. And she took a buggy, and I kid you not, literally all 3 of them grabbed the buggy. Like they were little kids walking in the grocery store, because that's how she would have them. She would have Edward, Nicole, and Brittany. No matter what went on in the grocery store, a fire could break out. You better not let go of that cart. And even to this day, with our granddaughter, you know, and our future daughter-in-law, she would be over on the side with the grandbaby. But for some reason, our oldest son would gravitate towards the cart. And so with the other two, they would gravitate towards the cart. And, you know, they would talk, they would have fun, but their hand would be on the cart. So everything our family did, it was pretty much close-knit. We barbecued together. And a lot of times we did that because we had different philosophies on how to raise our kids. You know, we wanted the traditional way. We wanted to be able to raise our kids so they can honor and respect and get out and go to work, because we don't believe in taking care of adults.
Oh, man, they don't.
So
I think there's another story here.
Man. Okay. Yeah, let me just tell you. Okay. So at the age, how old was Edward? 16, 17? I don't know. But he was kicked out. he was kicked out. And so what did he do? He went off on mama in front of daddy.
Uh-oh.
At night. Do you remember when you came back from work and he went off on mama? Okay. And he rose up, and it was no conversation. It was no argument between none of them. I was scared because I didn't know what to do. So there was no argument between my mom, my dad, and my brother. It was just an instant get out. That's it. I don't care what's going on. And the crazy thing about it is they didn't even give him a chance to pack anything or nothing. They put his stuff in a trash bag, you guys. It was black trash bag at that, and dropped it off at his job in front of the door. I'm like, ruthless. Oh, my God. So you know what that... Listen, that means me.
What kind of signal did that send to you?
Okay, y'all want me to cook a little bit. Y'all want me to clean a little bit. I shut up, went to my room, and that was it.
She took note of what was going on. We don't believe in being our children's best friends.
No.
We're parents, and we've always conducted ourselves as parents. And we demand respect. It is not an option, you know. So yes,
it's not.
It is truth to that.
Well, I want
to
know.
And to go back to what Mr. Cage was talking about with the family, with our family, we were teen parents. We did not have money. We did not have things to throw at them. So the only thing that we had was love. And that is what our family is built on. Love no matter what. You go through bad times, love. You whatever, love. And that's what we had, and that's what we showed them.
And
chicken wings.
That's a
shame.
Chicken
wings,
too.
Stop. Yeah,
chicken wings. Lord, help. See, you know what?
And beatboxing, right? Yeah. Go ahead, Ned.
So I want to know, like, so Ed and Nicole, if you two were to get into a tiff, would you just beatbox it out, or how?
We actually
do. No, seriously, yes, we do.
We get into, we get into altercations. We get into situations to where we disagree. And now over the last 2 years, we're really starting to disagree on a lot of things. But I can tell you one thing about Nicole. She has never came out of that situation that she's still the daughter. Nicole is an absolutely fantastic child. And when we do have disagreement, see, stuff like that. But when we do have disagreements, it would usually be us beatboxing it out. You know, we
How does that sound different than what you normally...
Angry, aggressive.
Okay. Well, it actually sounded like the viral video. Mentor versus Apprentice Part 2.
Yeah.
I was working at a hotel, and I had to go to work the next day. And so I wanted to do the Mentor versus Apprentice Part 2 because we had already did Part 1 in 2014.
Right.
I said, Mom and Daddy, we're going to do a video today, and we're going to do it in 5 minutes, okay, guys? It's not going to take longer than 5 minutes, so don't make it 5 minutes because I'm going to go to bed, okay? And so I said, Mom and Daddy, it's time to do the video. Let's go. Let's get ready. Daddy, get something on. I was already dressed. I was ready. I said, Daddy, get something on. It took them 45 minutes to get ready. I'm mad, okay? Now I'm mad. And so I said, Mama and Daddy, I tried to be the good daughter, you guys. I really did. I said, Mom, Dad, let's go. That's the second time I said it. And then it took them, what, an extra 15 minutes? Mama and Daddy, let's go now. Let's go. And so I was already mad. I had everything set up. I had the table set up. I was ready to go. Mom, she comes upstairs. Oh, is everything hooked up? Is everything charged up? What I'm supposed to do? What I'm supposed to use? What I'm supposed to stand? She was just complaining about everything under the sun. Daddy, he come in. Her is not brushed. I don't know. He looked like a caveman. I don't know what was going on. I said, Daddy, what is going? You know what? I don't even care. Let's go now. And so that was the result of me being mad. I was actually going off on Mom and Dad in a pleasant way. And so the part two, listen, it was just a revenge video right there, okay? So, and then the second part, the second round of me going, that was me being mad of the first round because he had messed up.
I messed up.
You stopped too. My turn. And so I wasn't going to stop the video because I was just going to let this just... No. I was just going to let this go off like worldwide. I was going to let everybody see because you didn't make me mad and it took you 80 years. So now you're going to be looking crazy on the video.
Just want to say that we made her so mad, she had to say, for God I live, for God I die.
I wondered where that came from.
Where that came from.
For God I live,
right.
For God I die. For God I lip. Pick 'em up, pick it up, pick it up, this is no battle. And then me saying that I'm actually saying there was a guy, you hear it?
So that is how much we got on her nerves.
That night. I just had to praise God at night. For me to stay in a daughter's role because... Oh, Jesus. Cut, 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 cut
Round two, no more. Round two, one. Round two, kick, one, two, kick, kick, kick rocks.
So I'm really curious, both of you actually get really physical when you start going on this. Is that something that just happens naturally, or is it something that like you use to warm up?
I really can't even answer that because I have no idea why I'm physical. I kind of scare myself. I'm like, uh-oh, I thought I was getting ready to punch Daddy in the face. Lord help me. So it comes natural for me.
Well, hip-hop, it's always been kind of physical. It's a show. So a lot of times back in the days when we used to do it, we had to be able to throw our hands and look cool. Like she'd be all up here and grabbing her throat and grabbing it. Then she'll reach over and grab my heart out. I'm like, who does that? What, you want to take my heart out and eat it?
I mean, bad.
What are you, a cannibal or something? So what I find myself doing now is just being a little bit more animated. But the way I do it is kind of old school cool. Plus, I'm 43. I'm never going to try to look or sound like I'm 22. You'll never see me in skinny jeans.
Oh, you guys.
I'm 6'1", 300 pounds. You'll never see me in skinny jeans. You'll never see me in a...
wrinkled clothes. Sorry.
Oh, wrinkled clothes. God. Like my pants and my clothes. It has to be starched because I want to represent. Well, here, let me explain to you first.
Okay,
when I decided to get off the street and stop selling drugs and a lot of things, one of the first things I did was change my outer appearance because I had a son. So I wanted to start presenting myself. So when I walked down the street with my son, even though I look just like him, I look 16 years older than him, I wanted folks to have that distinction that that's the father and that's the son. So I changed the way I dress. And one of the things I did was make sure that every time I walked out the house, my clothes was pressed.
And sitting up, literally.
You guys? Well, my jeans, I keep my jeans in the corner. And when I starch them, I make sure they're able to sit up in the corner like this.
Literally, they sit up.
Like, and every time when he takes them apart, you can hear the start. Like, why? Why do you need pants to sit up on the floor like another human being? Like, the pants was sitting like it had legs in the pants.
But it sounds like that being a father really was what turned you around. Is that right? Or what did turn you around?
Well, that and all of my friends started getting killed and going to jail. That's flat out. And plus, I had a girlfriend that brother was killed in the streets. She just didn't want no part of it at all. So, you know, when I turned about 18, 19, you know, my best friend went off to jail. And I went out and got this thing called a job. Scared everyone. It scared me that now I'm working. I'm part of society. And... you know, when you have a kid and you have a woman that wants to do right, it causes you want to be right. And some young guys don't realize that being in the streets, it's a little scary. But when you actually going into the world of adulthood, you're working every day, you have this thing called Amarin, Leclerc gas. They can care less if you're the toughest thug out on the street. Every month, that bill is coming. So I found it encouraging to continue to go out and work and be the father. Plus, I wanted my wife to be able to lay next to me and say I'm proud that that's my husband, that that is the father of our children. And I want my kids to be able to say, well, that's our father. That's my pops. So that was my main thing. My main thing was to be a good father and a good husband, regardless of how bad things was. And I had a wife that supported that. And when you have a family, there's two things that can happen. You can grow up, or as we used to say growing up, you can punk out. I love being a father and a husband, you know. And beatboxing now, part of the transformation is that's the proof right there, you know.
She's the proof.
She's the proof.
Nicole.
You know, and she's just absolutely fantastic.
This is kind of skipping back to some things you've mentioned a couple times, which is that you are in the studio working on stuff. Are you guys putting together an album?
We are working on an album, and we are working on a lot of projects that will be coming out around Christmas to 2017. So I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Can you say anything more about those projects?
Get ready for them.
Okay. So do you see, what kind of future do you see in this?
I see a lot of creativity in the future as far as the projects that we have. A lot of eye-openers, a lot of different, let's say, unique projects, if I must say. Very unique project, like things that you do not see now. So very excited for that.
Do you see this as a means of support at some point?
Yes.
Oh, yes,
yes.
It is a means of support.
It is.
We had to both quit our jobs.
You did. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. What were the jobs that you left?
I worked at Metro. I was a bus driver.
All right.
And I worked as a chef at the Hampton Inn, at Hampton Inn.
Okay. When did you quit your jobs? When did you know it was time?
I quit through, I'm sorry, that was a beat. I'm sorry. So I quit my job a couple of days after Mentor versus Apprentice Part 2 went viral because I couldn't go to my house without anybody following me. I couldn't work without anybody coming from their room and wanting to take pictures and beatbox for them and all this kind of, so I just ended up quitting. I had to.
Yeah, it got to the point to where she would call me, Daddy, what I'm going to do is that I'm going to turn and get on the highway. Can you be somewhere to meet me? Because I think it's somebody following me. And, you know, you go into daddy mode when, you know, somebody, I'm like, yeah. I'm
where at?
Where they at, though? So my wife, she like, can you all please calm down and not kill no one? I'm like, ooh, that's like, hey, man, what you doing following my daughter? Like, we just want to take a picture. Calm down. You pops! Oh, can I take a picture with you? I'm like, no, I want to fight you.
No, I want to fight you.
But you know what? I think most of it is just folks, they just so excited because at the beginning of it, people didn't realize we were from St. Louis. You know, and unless you literally sat there and watched the video a number of times, you really didn't know our face. Like when we was walking in L.A., that one guy, he literally was carrying food. And we had just walked past one of his tables he was serving. And he literally just put the food down
at the table,
ran out because it was like a little patio. And he like, oh, my God, y'all the father and daughter beatboxing. And we like, dude. You're literally one of our first fans to ever run up to us. And we was like,
listen, we're your fan.
Yeah.
We are your fan.
Thank you.
Here's the part where we usually say all the stuff about who we are, and then we close out. And we're still going to do that, but then after that, we're going to give you a little bit more of Ed and Nicole's beatboxing, just in case you can't get enough.
This is Cut and Paste, produced by Nancy Fowler
and Willis Ryder Arnold,
with the help of our editor, David Cazares.
The music you heard throughout is that of the beatboxing family, mostly, with a little bit from local musician Eric Hall.
And you can find Cut and Paste at stlpublicradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Please, get it.
full of that.
That was so bad.
Right here. Oh, okay. I got the beat going. Like, what do you mean?